I said earlier that the object or what we're experiencing is not so important. It's the flow of human body sensations, sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, things going on in the mind. In terms of our practice, everything that happens is human experience that can be known and understood. In particular, understood, one of the movements or directions that we aim towards or head towards in the practice is to be have a stable kind of mindfulness that can recognize all experience has some similar characteristics. Impermanent, changing, unreliable as a place to kind of hold on to for lasting happiness. Often uncontrollable. We don't often get to choose what is coming, and not self. Not me, not mine, not who I am, just processes of body and mind unfolding, tumbling on. And so the what is happening in our experience is this range of human experience in every experience that arises from this perspective of recognizing impermanent, unreliable, not self. Every experience can reveal that. And yet, the mind that has attitudes of greed or aversion or confusion in it is going to mask that changing, unreliable, not self nature of experience. And so, the checking of the attitude is a way to begin to notice what's in the way of recognizing our experience as it is, recognizing our experience as impermanent. So the attitudes are like a filter in our minds. If you're wearing certain color of glasses, put on some sunglasses, that this the color is going to affect the way that you see the world. Things are going to be tinted by that color. But when you wear those for a long time, it's like you forget that the world is tinted in that color. It's like, well, this is just the way the world looks. And it may be a little bit of surprise to recognize, oh, these glasses are on. May not even recognize that they're there. So the kind of the stepping back to check the attitude is kind of a checking of what filter is operating. What, how is the mind being influenced by a particular perspective? Is the mind being influenced by greed, aversion, confusion, a view, an attitude, a belief that's not seen, a delusion? Or is the mind more balanced? Is the mind able to see clearly the impermanent, unreliable, not self nature of experience? So I talked a little bit about times, good times to check the attitude. It can be useful just from time to time, every now and then, to just kind of remember to check in about the attitude. And if it feels like a pretty pretty stable meditation, You could check the attitude every few minutes. Sometimes people can get a little bit vigorous about checking the attitude, and it can almost feel like it turns into an infinite regress. It's like, oh, that's what's happening. Well, what's my attitude about that? And what's my attitude about that? And what's my attitude about that? And it gets a little busy. So just take some time with it. Notice if there is an attitude that arises, just let yourself kind of land with that. Well, that's the attitude that's here. How's that shaping the experience right now? Attitudes as a filter, using that analogy of the colored lens that's coming in, that color is shaping or influencing how we're seeing things. It tints everything that color, and so it changes our perception of it. It may even orient us to see certain things more easily than other things. Particular kinds of glasses may highlight different colors, right? I mean, if you have a particular kind of lens on, it may incline you to see certain colors more than other colors. Our attitudes of mind act that way too. This was a little bit of a startle for me when I began to really understand my own mind as being very frequently with the filter of aversion. Really frequently with that filter. It's like my habitual way of meeting the world. And what I began to recognize is that with that filter, the mind oriented towards looking for things that were unpleasant in order to fix them. At one point, my teacher encouraged me to settle back and just say, okay, what's obvious? Just receive what's here. And what's happening when you do that? And I did that for a few moments, maybe a minute or two, and he asked me to describe what I'd noticed. I said, well, you told me to just be choiceless about it, and I wasn't picking, but it clearly wasn't just random. It wasn't just, quote, choiceless, because every single thing my mind landed on was unpleasant. That was the orientation of my mind. And I began with that to understand how that attitude, that kind of baseline attitude of gotta kind of orient to make sure nothing's wrong, oriented me to look for what was wrong. So these attitudes are like filters in our mind. The attitudes that are based in greed, aversion, and delusion are like filters that shape and influence how we take experience in and how we respond to the world. With the attitude of greed in the mind, there's more of an inclination to reach out and get things, hold on to things. So sometimes Sayadaw speaks about noticing the job description. These attitudes in our mind are not just passive. They actually shape, they have functions in the mind. They do a job. Like I described with the aversion, in my mind, the aversive mind had this tendency to look for things that were wrong. That's a job, the job description, one of the job descriptions of aversion. The basic function of aversion, I began to understand, the basic function of aversion is to separate. The basic job description, aversion will separate. And it tends to orient the mind to looking for things to separate from. So that kind of curiosity, what is the job description of this state of mind? What's the job description of frustration? These states of mind think they're doing something for us. They think they're helping us. What is it that these states of mind are doing? How are they functioning? Well, again, this is a a light touch. This is not a diving into. Sometimes, you know, so I would hear a talk like this from Sayadaw, you know, where he'd say, you know, notice the job description. And I'd go off and I'd like search for the job description and I'd like start doing that. And I'd come back to Sayadaw and I'd describe. And he says, are you doing that? Are you trying to do that? I said, well, yes, Sayadaw, that's what I thought you told me to do. He said, no, nothing I say is something for you to do. It's information that may kind of inform how your practice subsequently unfolds. Hearing these suggestions or reflections at some point in the meditation, you know, you might kind of seeing, oh, this is what's happening, you know, oh, there's aversion in the mind. And then maybe having heard this story, that this is a condition, this expression of listening to, hearing the Dharma is a condition for you, and it may kind of enter into your meditation in that moment. Oh, what is the job description of? And then there's that curiosity right in that moment. And I will say that I do find it useful from time to time to kind of drop in these kinds of questions or reflections. But again, more as questions than a doing. Okay, mind and body, maybe you can show me what the job description of aversion is, or what the job description of frustration is, or what the job description of love is when you see that. What the job description of patience is when you see that. Those wholesome attitudes of mind, when there's wise attitude, when the mind is okay, as I talked about last night, there are many flavors of wholesome qualities that can also be arising. They also shape our minds. They tend to shape our minds in more wholesome ways. And one of the great things about this quality of mindfulness, this quality of curiosity, the kind of mindfulness that really just receives and is curious about this experience as human experience. What is the human experience of love? What is the human experience of patience? The great thing about mindfulness is that when that non-reactive, curious awareness meets and is aware of something that is unskillful, based in greed, aversion, or delusion, the meeting of that, the seeing of that, the knowing of that, tends to create the conditions for that experience to become less, to weaken, to release, to dissipate, to happen less frequently in the future. It's not a magic bullet that suddenly stops it from happening, but it is a condition that supports the unwinding, supports the transformation, the releasing, the letting go of states based in greed, aversion, and delusion. And when we bring our curious, mindful attention to wholesome states, it's very tempting with wholesome states. You know, it's very, very likely that what will happen when we see a wholesome state, or when that kind of wholesome state is happening, there can be a kind of a, ooh, that's good. Let me do more of that. You know, and so there's a greed that comes in often when we see those wholesome states. And so that needs to be known. So, oh, there's joy happening. Ooh, and I want more of that. Okay. There's joy and wanting is happening. Know that. But when the mind is simply curious, oh, there's joy in the mind, what's that like? That creates the conditions for those wholesome states to strengthen, to develop, to grow, to happen more frequently in the future. So this simple quality of mindfulness, wise mindfulness, this non-reactive curiosity about experience as experience. What is this human experience? It tends to move us in the direction of letting go of the unwholesome and cultivating the wholesome, letting go of states that are based in greed, aversion, and delusion, and cultivating the qualities of mind that support freedom. Love, compassion, wisdom, patience, joy, delight, calm, equanimity, trust, confidence, curiosity. So many different qualities that can be there. And so that checking into how is the mind when there is a noticing of it's okay. Some kind of maybe hovering in that space, receiving the okayness. What's it like to be okay? What else is there with the okayness? Maybe it's different flavors of the okayness. And so checking the attitude from time to time. I mentioned that sometimes when it feels like it's going really well, it is useful to check the attitude. And that is partly because it can reveal those subtle movements of liking it, wanting it to continue, fear it's not going to continue. Just revealing those kind of very subtle holdings or wanting things to move in a particular direction. And it can help us to start to see these wholesome qualities in the mind. So those are two times it's good to check the attitude. Can be helpful when there's a struggle, as I've mentioned. When it feels like it's going well. And a third time that can be useful to check the attitude is when the mind returns from wandering in thought. Often we have a relationship to the fact that our mind has wandered. And so in the returning from thinking, that may be the attitude that's kind of obvious. Oh, I was thinking again, you know, that's an attitude. It's a common one to have a subtle aversion to, or even a more obvious aversion to the fact of the mind wandering. And so noticing that that's a part of what's present, if that's present. And also recognizing that at this moment, the mind is no longer wandering. Mindfulness has returned. So there's, you know, checking the attitude as the mind has returned from wandering. Part of what we might get to see is the relationship to the fact that the mind had wandered. But another thing that can sometimes happen there is that when the mind wanders, it goes off into some kind of thought or thinking. And this is connected to what I said yesterday about noticing what planet you're on. You know, what planet do you wake up on when you return from a wandering? The wandering mind will often shape experience in some way. You know, maybe we wander into a conversation that we've had with a coworker. That conversation maybe had a little bit of a charge to it, and the mind, you know, in waking up into it, is probably experiencing some ripples of that charge. The wandering has shaped, and you know, when our mind wanders into a particular thought, often the things that were happening, the emotions, the states of mind, the moods that were happening when that was happening, those are recreated. So they are arising in the moment. So when you return from wandering, take some time to be curious about what has been shaped. Are there any kind of, you know, hidden behind the scenes attitudes that wandering has produced. And you don't have to go back and think about what the wandering was. It's here now. It's available here, perhaps, to see what was shaped, what planet am I on? Is there an attitude kind of hidden in the mind about what has been shaped in experience? If we kind of try to jump over what was shaped with the idea of I'm supposed to return to the present moment, it's like, okay, be with the present moment. But we may not think or recognize that the shaping that happened when the mind was wandering, that is what's here in the present moment. But if we try to think of jumping over it, and often the familiar teaching of, oh, I noticed the mind was wandering, come back to the breath, can have that effect on the mind, that we kind of jump over what was going on. We try to just let go of that wandering thought and then return to the present moment with the breath. We try to return to that. But whatever has been shaped there, sometimes behind the scenes, that attitude or that kind of state of mind can then be how we start observing the experience. So, if the mind had kind of wandered into a scenario that had some frustration in it, and frustration arose, but we didn't quite notice that, when we return to paying attention to whatever it is, like the breath, or if we have an agenda to direct the attention, that frustration may be applied to, because it's a filter, it shapes how we receive experience. That filter of frustration may shape how we receive the breath. So, this is another reason why it's useful to kind of check in, to take some time with what has been happening in the wandering. What is here present now, the mind having been wandering? What planet am I on? What's the attitude about this planet? There's nothing in particular we have to return to. We're returning to what's here. And what's here is a combination of the moment of waking up and how the mind is in that waking up, and what has been happening in the moments before, this conditioned unfolding. We get to know, we move in the direction of this wise attitude of the okayness with what's happening. As Sayadaw often says, you get to know wise attitude, you find your way to wise attitude by getting to know the unwise attitude, the reactive attitudes of mind based in greed, aversion, and delusion, by getting to know those really well. By having them revealed, pulled out of the way we're observing into just something else that's being present. Sometimes we can feel that shift when we see an attitude of, let's say, aversion, seeing the aversion in the mind. Oh, that's what's happening. It kind of moves from being in the background to being here, seen. And the mind might have a sense of, oh, that's what's happening. And oh, I can be okay with that. So even as the attitude is still unfolding, we might notice a kind of shift in experience. The okayness of that aversion being present, kind of a little bit of space around it. And that is moving in the direction of wise attitude. When we see an unwise attitude, when we see an attitude based in greed or aversion or delusion, some things that can support us to hold it using some reflections or questions, can this be allowed? Can this too be allowed? It's just another thing happening in the mind. It's just another impermanent, unreliable, uncontrollable phenomenon. It's just something arising. Can it be allowed? Might be helpful at times if it's strong, if it feels like the mind is kind of starting to get swamped by it, to use some of the tools we talked about in terms of working with difficulty. Maybe bringing in some compassion. Recognizing this is suffering. And it's conditioned. It's been shaped. If I had a choice, I would probably let it go. But often we find we don't have that control. The Buddha pointed to a profound teaching about this. We often feel like, what am I doing wrong? I can't let it go. I can't get rid of it. The Buddha said, these things in the mind that arise like this, they are not self. Because they're not self, we can't say of them, be gone. May the mind be like this. May the mind not be like that. It is because it is not self that it is uncontrollable. So that seeing, when we see that sense of, I can't fix this, I can't change this, let that be a kind of a, you can let that be a kind of a, oh, this is because it's not self. This is a pointer to the understanding of not self. Of the conditioned process nature of experience, the uncontrollable nature of experience. We think we're doing something wrong, but that's just the sense of self that's all confused about itself. It's not self. So for me, that recognition of the conditioned nature of experience, when I recognize, oh yeah, there's that aversion again, how many times have I seen this? No, of course it's happening again. This mind has done this for years. The mind has done this. Of course. Of course it's happening. That is connecting in a way to the recognition of the conditioned nature of that experience. For me, that brings in, that's my doorway into compassion. That wisdom reflection around, of course, this is happening. This is conditioned. This is nature. That's one way that Sayadaw Utejaniya puts it. This is nature. This phenomenon is happening out of causes and conditions. A tree grows because the seed was planted and it's gotten the conditions to be get enough light and water to grow. This is the plant that's growing right now. Of course, this mind state is growing. It's been watered for years. It's been nurtured for years, carefully tended by causes and conditions of the mind in the past. Of course, it's growing right now. And for me, that recognition has been a supportive doorway to compassion because it's connected to the understanding, I'm not doing this. Right now, it's not my choice that this is happening. It's conditions unfolding that are making it grow. And the condition of bringing that awareness of curiosity, the kind of the confidence, the trust that that is supportive. Having seen that kind of space that comes there, the kind of okayness that can come there can be a trust that grows. This is a way to a shift or a transformation around this particular pattern. Doesn't necessarily happen in our time frame of the transformation around that, but it does. The conditions of this practice do move in that direction. So let's take a 5-minute break.